Hello, and welcome to Awkward Men Asking Awkward Questions. I just got a giggle because that probably sounded exactly like my intro to Two Tons of Talk. Kind of. I am Ian Page.
And I am Stephen Lieb. And I don't sound like I'm from Two Tons of Talk.
Because you're not.
Nope.
This is the podcast, for those of you who don't know, where Steve and I interview some of our friends and coworkers and peers and ask them really awkward questions about life and
death
and anything else that comes to mind. Today, we've got a really awesome guest who's laughing already. I'm not sure about what.
I bet you can't guess what he's wanting to do with his life.
Yeah. What? I don't even know what the hell that meant.
Professional laugher.
Professional laugher. Nick Dressel.
Hey, thanks for having me. Guys, first of all, really high energy start. You really, really brought him in. Like, if they weren't already a listener, that intro alone would be like, I have to listen to
the rest of man, it. Absolutely. Yeah. I try really hard. It's not like it's 11:30 at night.
Right, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, they can listen to the show instead of taking their sleeping pills.
Yeah.
At night.
Just lull. We lull them to sleep.
Your voices are kind of like milk butter. Or buttermilk. I like milk butter better.
Is that milk made from butter?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. But I like all butter. Or all...
I think it's the other way around.
I'm an actor and a comedian and a writer and a podcast host. A podcast cast.
A podcast.
Hast.
A podcast.
Podcast coast coast.
Oh, God, it is 11:30. We show our tiredness in different ways.
Yeah, so Nick Dressel, good friend, also co-founder of founder of Nobody's Podcast, but co-founder of the Nobody's Network.
Yeah, because it's an institution now.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of little pies to put our fingers
There's
in.
There's a it's structure.
Awesome.
Yeah. Synergy.
Yes.
And we'll talk more about that towards the end of the podcast. But for now, let us get into our third annual, I don't know if it's...
Annual?
What do you call it if it's weekly?
Weekly? Our third weekly?
Sure.
Yeah.
Our third weekly segment. Steve, take it over.
Okay.
Random topic of the day.
Come on, generate.
It has one job, and that's to generate a topic.
World's top five. Smartest people.
World's top five smartest people.
It's pretty ambiguous. I mean,
okay. So, do we know who the world's top five smartest people are?
Well, I would imagine that Stephen Hawking
totally
would be on there. But that's not like that's just brain function, not necessarily body function in that one.
No, I don't think so.
But he used to have a lot of body function.
He did.
When?
Well,
I thought he was born in the chair. Like, I thought the chair came out of the womb.
Well, then props to his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was a tiny chair at the time. To be fair, it was a baby-sized chair.
It's organic.
That was made out of afterbirth.
To Stephen Hawking.
Oh, that's awful.
Oh, wow.
No.
That wheelchair is what the umbilical cord turns into if you don't cut it.
So,
wow. Jeez.
I know, right? I know.
Wow.
Onward. I will say Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I don't know if he's necessarily on that list, but he totally should be.
He should be.
He just looks up.
He does.
That's all he does.
But did you hear his, about a week ago, he went on Twitter to, he came up with the estimated weight of Thor's hammer.
What? Oh, whoa. Okay, what is it?
It's something like 300 quintillion tons or something like that.
And that's to anyone who's not Thor? Or does Thor...
No, Thor... Because
Thor can pick up that much weight?
Yeah, because...
Well, okay. So he could pick up Earth.
No, because Earth weighs more than this. Because what it is, it's made from the matter of a collapsing star, according to Marvel...
Source.
No, isn't it a spell... That allows him, like, well, it makes it lighter to him?
Probably.
This is what I would say.
I'm not a Thor, aficionado.
Is it one of the points of...
Well, you should be.
A Thor aficionado.
Maybe you're a tiny Thor aficionado.
Fuck that.
isn't the whole point of the Asgardians is that it's magic and technology infused in the one?
Yeah.
So maybe he has something about him that cancels out The way.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, did you say Asgardians?
Asgardians.
That's what us straight guys need when we go to Spiral. We need some Asgardians.
Yeah, but he said it was like 300 quintillion tons or something, some number like that, some big ass number. And he said that
big Asgardians number.
And it's the equivalent, he said, of 300 million elephants.
Why elephants?
I don't know why he said elephants.
He could have been like blue whales.
So, like, I would rather see Thor hitting somebody with 300 million elephants.
That would be like a really like those epic Final Fantasy summons.
Like, yeah, an Aeon. Yeah, totally.
Like, but my Aeon is 300 million elephants.
It's like that cactus that does the thousand needles.
Yes,
but with elephants.
That would be the. That's it. We're making a game.
Third
awkward men asking awkward questions. The game.
Never forget.
Third smartest.
If you're hit with 300 million elephants, you would never forget.
Depends on what size elephants they are.
What, like just tiny elephants?
They're like water droplet sized elephants.
But you're hit by one per second for the rest of your life.
It's just really annoying more than anything.
Just every once in a while. In the forehead.
Yeah, anything else on the topic of the five most smartest...
TJ Frazier
is on that list.
Yep.
TJ Frazier, hopefully future guest of this podcast.
Oh god, you are in for it if he's on here, man.
Oh man, that'll be a good one.
Oh,
he's
god.
An encyclopedia.
Seriously, he defeated David Clawson. That's why David Clawson's not on the top five. Because TJ Frazier defeated him in the Smarty Pants contest.
Yeah. Teaches good people. Who else? Okay, so we got Neil deGrasse Tyson, Stephen Hawking,
TJ Frazier, Stephen Colbert, maybe.
I'll give that.
Yeah,
I'll give that.
He's like satirical smart.
For his yeah.
I would make it a joint between him and
Jon Stewart. Yeah, like them together would be one of the smartest five people.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
And then Larry the Cable Guy. Done.
I'm gonna disagree, but
no, he has perseverance. He has motivation.
How
he gets
else? How else?
Done.
Like with that, he does. He gets Steve. What a slow burn joke.
What did he say?
He gets things done.
Oh wow, that's
really good. I'm
impressed.
Yeah,
thank you. That means a lot to me, actually.
But my sister completely covered in moles. We used to call her Old Moly, and she went down to the church. We call her Holy Moly.
See, that's intelligent.
So I think we've exhausted the.
Well, unless you want a real fifth smart person.
Okay, let's think of a fifth smartest person.
How dumb are we that we can't think of five smart people?
Would it be like maybe Bill Gates or like a?
How about the person? How about Ted?
The guy who
talks.
I don't. Yeah, we'll go with Ted.
He's pretty smart on a lot of subjects.
Well, yeah.
Ted gets an honorable mention.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the five smartest.
Newton, because it never said they had to be alive.
You don't have to be smart to have an apple drop on you.
He went home,
like he goes, "Oh, apples drop."
Newton went home for one weekend, he went home. Came up with calculus.
When's the last time you came up with calculus?
I'm more impressed with the fact he came up with the fig Newton.
That was him?
Yeah, that's why it's called that.
Where do figs come from then?
They dropped on his head. And he goes, oh, cookies! But it's not a cookie. It's a fig Newton.
Okay, we've gone off into weird territory. I think it's time for us to take a break. And when we come back, after you take your pee, or whatever.
Are you talking to me? Because I kind of do.
Sure.
Ted talks.
We will be back with our awkward interview with Nicholas Dressel. See you in a bit. And welcome back. I hope you had a good pee break.
I did.
Nick had a very good pee break.
I didn't know that I was going to, and then the water ran. Gabe got water, and I'm like, I'm going to commit to this.
Yeah, so...
For those of you who don't know, Gabe Cooper is roommates with Ian Page.
Yeah, if you didn't listen to our first episode, which you're dumb, I'm not gonna...
Insult the two people who listen to your show.
Two? We have two now?
We have 13 fans on Facebook.
Different than listening.
I know, that's true. Probably no one listens, but, you know, we'll see. Yeah, so let's get started with the interview. Cool?
Let's get awkward.
So quirky.
I hate you.
Let's get quiet. That's the name of the show. Let's get into it.
Okay. You're such an ass.
Is that how you're starting? You're right. I'm a bit of an ass.
Maybe we should start each interview segment with "Let's get awkward."
No.
Steve, that is now your catchphrase.
No.
Please do it every time.
Let's get awkward.
Let's get awkward.
It was either that or, oh, that's so quirked.
Oh, I love it.
Wait, what did you say?
That's so quirked. He shortened it.
I'll take that. I'll take that over.
You'll take that?
I put that in the theme song, over. Let's actually, go awkward. Once you finally hear it.
Okay. Speaking of Nick... Speaking of you being an asshole,
okay,
let's talk a little bit about your asshole.
Oh, okay. Is this a Crohn's disease?
This
question?
Is a Crohn's disease question.
Oh, I thought in a different direction.
Gay what? Sex? Is that gay, my gay
you
sex?
You put one? Things up there. You know?
No, I've never done.
Things come out.
Actually, you know that there are two things that link with what you've just said. Because of Crohn's disease, I've had to take suppositories before.
Oh, that sucks.
That really sucks.
I had to take medication suppository wise once.
Well, like,
when I was like young.
The little bullets or like
little bullets.
Yeah. So like if anyone out there has never taken a suppository, stick your finger as far up your butt as you can and then imagine it going a little further.
Yeah.
I was little though,
so I didn't have any like, you know, concept of what was going on.
Yeah.
Like I was like probably 7. Or so when that happened.
Maybe
like,
you don't remember it because it was so scarring.
It might be.
Well, you know, like the first time I ever... let's really get awkward.
Yeah.
The first time I ever had blood in my stool.
Totally. Well, first of all, before you go there, describe a little what Crohn's disease for people who aren't familiar with it.
Okay, I'm going to hardly not go into my bit when I describe this a little bit.
Okay,
it is... I get diarrhea whenever I eat food.
Yeah.
Any food. So if I have a class or anything, I don't eat... Before it. I only really eat in the evening, and I know that's bad, and that's probably why I'm a little fat still. Which is weird, because Crohn's disease has, one of the side effects is weight loss. Which is, like, I'm, like, one of the few fat people with Crohn's disease. My dad sort of had, like some sort of a, he had colitis, is what mm-hmm. they called it. And he was thin as a rail. And I have the same sort of thing, but I'm still fat.
So you're doing good, then.
I've actually lost a lot of weight in this past year.
Yeah.
Like, as you can attest to, I used to be a lot fatter, and, but life is essentially a game of bet you can't make it to the bathroom, and the clock can start anywhere from 10 minutes to roughly 10 seconds, and if I win, I win a chance to play again, and if I lose, I lose my pants, but I win a chance to play again. And how awkward do you want it to get? Because I literally, if I have my backpack on me, I have a grocery bag in my backpack that has a fresh pair of underwear in it. And if something happens, I take out the grocery bag, take the underwear out of it, I put the soiled pair in the grocery bag, and then I put on the fresh pair, and then I'm ready to go.
Worst case scenario, do you think you'll ever have to use the plastic bag?
As underwear?
As a depository. A place where you have to go in.
Like, I think he's saying if you couldn't find
If I was ever in a place where I could pull down my pants and use the restroom, I would just use the outside.
Well, you don't want to keep it?
So yeah, that is awkward.
So
now, you were saying, speaking of awkward, your first time with blood in your stool.
Okay, yeah. I went to the doctor, and the doctor had to do, like, a check up there. And my mom was with me, and she said that the look on my face was just so violated and, like, awful. Like, that she started crying with the doctor's finger up my butt. Some gay men, I guess, get pleasure when that happens. I did not, and probably never will at this point.
What if it had been, like, a sexy doctor?
With like a penis-shaped finger?
Yeah. A female doctor with a penis-shaped
finger. A female doctor, I don't know, do female doctors have to have their fingernails cut?
I'm assuming if you're a proctologist in any way, you have to have your fingernails trimmed.
I would love to see like a black lady doctor come in with like long Letitia fingers. Be like, it's time for your proctology exam today. And she puts on her gloves, and her gloves extend, like, 3 inches beyond her fingers because of the fingernails. And she goes, okay, let's stick a little bit of a finger up the butthole. Oh, you got some problems up in there because it's bleeding. And I think it's because I scratched the inside of your colon with my fingernails.
Oh, God.
That was racist and horrible.
Yeah, it was. You're our first racist guest. Which is funny because we had Gabe and Eric.
I can't believe they didn't say anything racist.
You're outclassing them, right?
Yeah, you're doing
it. Well, this is a fictitious black woman that obviously does not exist. Her name is Fictitia.
Fictitia. One of my favorite things about Nick is watching him come up with jokes because I've never seen someone so proud of his own material. And I respect him for that.
Well, you know, to quote Pete Holmes, why do material that I don't find funny?
Absolutely.
And here's another thing, and I tell this to Sophie all the time, because she'll give me looks for laughing at myself. Because of my improv background, a lot of times I will start out a sentence, and a thing will occur to me in the moment, and I will just change where the sentence goes, and I didn't have the thought, really, before I said it. So when I'm saying it, I am hearing it for the first time like everybody else, and am delighted.
I dig that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Perfect.
Okay, all right. Because if you can put yourself so that literally you're saying things out loud before you think them.
Yeah.
And in which case, I hear myself and enjoy.
I'm glad you enjoy yourself.
Well, you have mentioned your background in improv.
Yeah.
So your background takes you to Chicago.
Yeah, I studied at Second City, and I guess that I think people who like graduated from Second City might be mad at that because I only took a semester there. But it's true that I studied at Second City. I would never say that I'm a Second City graduate or anything, but I did study there.
Okay. Is it a yearly course, 2 years?
Well, it's broken down in two ways. If you're just a guy off the street, you take 5 sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that's done, then you can look at, like, trying to get into their shows.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are a theater major, and it's, like, they look at, like, whether or not you have a theater degree, or, for me, they looked at my resume, which had an extensive theater background.
Mm-hmm.
They break down those 5 into 2. So what I took was something called Improv for Actors. So I took the first half of the complete thing that I would have needed to start to go up into their upper echelon.
Okay. So, how long ago was that?
That was in 2008, I believe.
2008?
Yeah.
Okay, and how old were you at that time?
Well, I don't know. I'm an actor. Math. I'm 27 now.
27
And
now.
It's 2013.
He's 113 now, I think is actually
what
you are.
Well, no, I'm 27. I'm older than college kids here because this is my fourth college.
Your fourth college?
Yeah.
I did not know this was your fourth college.
Yeah.
Where did you go
before? It's 5 times at college, but I did one twice.
Okay.
I graduated from high school. I was dual enrolled at my community college, and then once I graduated, I went to the community college full time.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got an opportunity to go to American Musical Dramatic Academy in Los Angeles. I went out there for a semester. I got sick with my Crohn's. I don't ever really go into this because it's weird, but this is the awkward show. So I, on the plane ride there, my butt started to hurt. And I'm like, that's not good.
You figured this out on the flight.
On the flight to LA, my butt started to hurt and it got progressively worse. And what happened was I had a sort of fissure, pus filled thing that was starting to grow on my butthole. This is awkward men asking awkward questions.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Well, and it got so bad that I couldn't even stand or sit comfortably. The only thing I could do was lay down on my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
On the plane.
No. This was over a course of the semester.
Okay.
And it got so bad one day that I'm like, I literally cannot even wipe myself. So I had to go to the emergency room. And they lanced it and drained it. So for a while, there was a part of my butt that was just a cavernous area that should not have been. This is as awkward and awful.
No, I love it. When I say ugh, I say that out of I feel for you, man. Yeah.
So, but my insurance that I had at the time, it was my parents' insurance. It was I was covered for one emergency room visit out of state, and then the rest of it covered me in state.
So you had to.
So the thing was is like God, I'm here in LA. I'm doing it. If I finish this course, we do a showcase for agents, and then I'm good to go. And I'm like, I didn't want to leave, but I was horribly, horribly sick, mm-hmm. and I was missing a lot of school because of this thing. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I prayed about it, which is maybe a weird thing.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah. I woke up the next morning and I just go, I need to go home. Mm-hmm. And that's all there was to it. So I'm like, hey guys, I'll be right back. I got to go get this thing taken care of. I'll be right back. And I have not been back to LA because I found out later that like AMDA is a little bit of a scam. They call it Scamda. And, my improv teacher, whose name is Frances Callier, she left in the middle of the semester because she got a job. That's just how it worked. If they had a job, they would not be teaching at this school. Yeah. So, she was on Best Week Ever. Mm-hmm. She was on My Name is Earl. And her comedy partner were on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen her since then. We had a teacher there who was our big acting guru. He taught our, big acting class. He was bald and he was intense. We were all really afraid of him. And then one of us looked up his IMDb page, and I think it was new at the time, IMDb.
Yeah.
And all he had listed was irate customer on one episode of That 70s Show. And we were a lot less intimidated of him after that.
Well, if you can't do teach... And obviously, these teachers still wanted to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned about AMDA in high school because mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this sounds awesome. It's like
it does because I didn't hear any of the bad before I moved.
Yeah, it sounds so cool because isn't like you can take it like a year or 2 years and it's like
it's like a 2 year course, like four semesters, and you're working with actors, which is true. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of teachers there that were really quite something. Yeah. My acting for TV and film teacher, his name is Todd Patrick Bria. He's worked on a lot of commercials. He knows his shit.
Yeah.
And then there was Mimi Seaton, who is the musical teacher, which was there was two sections. There were people who wanted to do music and people who wanted to do straight up acting. And which is that one was more popular in LA. And I imagine the opposite was true in New York because they have two campuses.
Yeah.
But she had done a lot of voiceover work. So she and I took to each other quite quickly. So if I stayed there, they would have been contacts that probably would have gotten something.
Yeah.
But it didn't work out that way.
Yeah.
And where do you want to go from there? I can tell you what happened next in my life, or you can expand on any of that.
Well, sure. I guess what I wanted to ask you is, all right, you've been going to different schools. You went to Second City for a while. You had your stint out in L.A.
Well, the Second City thing is a weird thing because I was working at the Cinema Carousel in Muskegon, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And in the summertime, I would do summer stock theater, which was, it's a paid gig. It's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
And one of my teachers that I had is named Chris Hayes. He did these summer conservatory Shakespeare workshops. He's actually British. He's worked with the BBC. He's worked with the Royal Shakespeare Company. And he came and saw me in a show, and he goes, let's go out to lunch someday.
That was cool.
I'm like, oh yeah, absolutely. I love you. He's like my guru. He's the one who got me in love with Shakespeare. I didn't care for it before him, and he really made me see what Shakespeare was all about. Mm-hmm. And he goes, what the hell are you still doing here? And I go, oh, well, I know I went to L.A. I had a sickness thing. He goes, you need to get out of Muskegon. You're not going to go anywhere right now. He goes, if you go to Chicago or anywhere in the next 6 months, I will give you $500.
So kind of a makeshift scholarship.
Yeah, so I got things together. I worked it out, and I was writing for a pop culture website called Spunky Bean, which I still am proud of what I wrote for that website. And it's a legitimate website, but it's sort of... There's the market saturated. But one
same
of the
with podcasts.
Yeah. Absolutely. I haven't really advanced at all, really. And one of the girls I was writing on there with, she lived in Chicago. So I'm like, hey, can I come and live with you? She goes, yeah, kind of. We have a space for you. We're gonna move pretty soon, but you can help us move. It'll work out. Be perfect. I moved down there on my birthday. My parents You know, here's the thing. We found out where I was living. We opened the door. And the woman who runs the house, which is different than the girl that I had kind of known, she was the coldest, most least receptive. It was like opening the door to, like, a horrible stepmother or something. Ooh. And so they took me out to eat before they were going to leave. And it was my birthday. And they brought out a cupcake and put a candle on it. And I sobbed uncontrollably because they were leaving me there with this horrible woman on my birthday. And I never had a great time. Like, I fooled myself into thinking I was doing okay because, like, I went to see, like, a Second City show with, like, Brian Doyle Murray and Harold Ramis were there and Joe Flaherty. And I'm like, I'm going to do something. I'm taking Second City classes. But I was just sad and miserable the entire time. And so when they moved, they go, you can't come with us because we don't like you.
Really?
Yeah. So I had to finish my semester at Second City by taking the train in once a week. And then once that was done, I'm like, I want to go back. I actually already prepaid them for my second semester. And now that's just lost money because it doesn't hold up. They go, that money will be good for about a year. But now it's not
there. That experience, I don't know, traumatic or just... How has that influenced you today in pursuing what you want to do?
That's a great question. The way that it has influenced me is 100% because now I know from those two experiences that I am not the sort of person that can move somewhere alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't restart a whole social group. I don't do well with it. Like when I was in LA and Chicago, I saw amazing, incredible things that meant nothing because I was alone. It might as well be a dream.
Yeah.
Like, if I can't share that with somebody, if I can't lean over to Ian and make a sarcastic comment about something...
And have me, like, shut it down.
Right, yeah. I need somebody there to hear me comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
It means nothing. So I didn't know what I was going to do, and so I was back home, and I knew Sophie, my girlfriend, since she was 11 and I was 17. And we were in a play together. She was a little girl. She was precocious. She was cute. I talked to her like I talk to little kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she said something to me about, like, her mom made pistachio bread. And I'm like, what is pistachio bread? And I've never heard of that. She goes, it's really good. And the next day she brought me a loaf of pistachio bread, which is a very delicious dessert. And I'm like, she's just a sweet little girl that I knew. And then, like, throughout the years, she just become this girl that came and saw me in plays that I remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day she came and I'm like, she's a grown-up hot girl. She's cute now. And that was a little weird. So I asked her out to go see, like, a movie or something. And it was apparent to me she was still very young at that time. And she was talking about high school shit. Wow. And, like I'm like, I shouldn't be taking you out
and
right
had
now.
A couple life experiences.
Yeah, I'm like, ew, this is weird. You're too young for me to be out with you right now. And this is not going to happen. And, she might tell it a different way where I tried stuff and she just got out of a relationship, which I would have made out with her in a heartbeat if she'd been into it, but she wasn't. And so I'm like, okay, fine, we're just friends. But right before I left for Chicago, I helped her work on a monologue for an audition. And then I told her, oh, by the way, I'm leaving tomorrow for Chicago. And apparently that made her go, oh no, I care about you. And she didn't know it until that moment. I didn't know this till way later. But when I got back, I invited her to a board game night at my house, and we just hit it off, and that night I drove her home, and we kissed on her porch step, and we've been dating ever since. That was December 15th, 4 years ago.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Aww.
That's great. And so that's what led me to MSU, because she graduated from high school, and she was going, like, I'm going to go to MSU. I'm like, I don't know what to do. Maybe you should go to Chicago with me. Maybe you should make another decision. She goes, no, my mom wants me to go to MSU. I'll get more money for in-state college. And then it just occurred to me, why don't you go? You've always wanted to finish college. Maybe you can finally freaking do it. So, like, I came out and I visited her a lot. And I saw all the shows that were happening. I really like the department.
Mm-hmm.
Rob Rosnowski is a very inspiring dude when you meet him.
He is.
And like, I still think he's, like, one of the smartest theater dudes I've ever met.
Absolutely is.
You do a scene and you're like, this is great. And you show it to him and he goes, you need to fix this, this, and this. And I'm like, of course I do. How did I not see that? He's an amazing genius.
I want to get Rob on here one day. I don't think about what happened.
He would be incredible.
But,
yeah.
But,
no, we'll save that for talks later on.
Yeah, we'll see. So yeah, you bringing up Sophie, that's cool, because that's literally my next question.
Awesome.
You're doing You and Eric both.
You're bringing all the awkward yourself.
I feel like I'm an open book. I don't really have anything that I'm...
So, your love life with Sophie. Mm-hmm. You talked about how you guys met and the awkwardness that comes with that.
Pistachio bread.
Yeah, that's still... She made it again later on when we were dating. Oh. You know, like this is like our dessert. This is... Because this is, goes all the way back to when we first knew each other. Which is a little weird sometimes, because like sometimes she'll do something... And it will spark a memory that I have of her as a child. And I'm like, whoa, that's cute, and I remember, and you're an adorable person, but that's weird, because I'm sexually involved with you.
Yeah. let's talk about your sex life. So, I figure your sex life must be thoroughly awkward.
Why do you figure that?
Pistachio bread.
Like, already the story of... The two of you coming together is pretty awkward.
We have sex, we always come together, Ian.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Do you ever... All right, you're mid-coitus. Do you ever have flashbacks of that little girl on the stage?
No. I think that would be an amazing boner kill if that happened. When I have sex, I try not to think thoughts.
That's always a good idea.
Because if I'm thinking any more than gruff, good, feeling... If I get any more heady than that, then it's not as fun, then it's not as good. And then if it's like I may think of something bad that will kill my boner, like a bad thought will take me completely out of it.
Totally.
But me and Sophie were both virgins.
Yeah, I actually my next thing I said love life with Sophie, comma first sexual experience.
Okay, here's an interesting thing. What is your...
I was going to say, or just ask, was that awkward? Was that, like, a comforting experience?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, like, growing up Christian, and I know that's coming. we need to stop...
making coming and head jokes.
Yeah.
They're awkward puns. It's okay.
I hadn't had sex at all, and my first time I ever had sex was at 23. And that's old. Nowadays, but it was the sort of thing where, like, you know, you grow up, you're like, Christian, I'm like, I'm gonna wait till marriage, mm-hmm. and then later on, you're like, well, I'm gonna wait till I actually love somebody, and so I will go on record stating that Sophie was not the first time I had the opportunity to have sex, mm-hmm. because I'd done a lot of blowjobby, going down on chicks naked with each other sort of things with girls,
kind of. Pushing the threshold.
Yeah, like, I've done everything you can do but have sex, not anal. but I had been experienced with girls and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. In that way. And then when me and Sophie were together, we were together for about 6 months or so, maybe longer than that even. She had just turned 18. Authority figures, she was 18. And we started to say, so she was like, I think I'm ready to have sex with you. Which was a weird thing to hear. And I thought about it, and I go, yeah, you know what? I think I'm ready to have sex, too. So that happened. That conversation happened. And then weeks passed. And we started to go through the steps to make that happen. She talked to her mom. She got on birth control. Which was... her mom's super liberal. That wasn't, like, a big deal. Like, her mom bought her pot. She says it's not the case, but it's like... Her mom's like, do you want to do pot? You can do it in our basement. Like, she was like that kind of mom. And that's more of a Sophie conversation if you want to ever have her.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. But so, like, all the pieces got put in place. And then we're like, okay, tonight's the night. And we got condoms. And I put on a condom. And it immediately killed my boner.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, what do we do? And so we kept trying. We tried for weeks, and I couldn't figure out the Rubik's Cube of the vagina. We were literally pushing private parts into one another, and we couldn't figure out how to make sex work.
Hey, I'm right there with you.
Okay, virgin on virgin, nobody knows what to do.
Oh, my first experience was virgin on virgin, too, and the first time we did it, I was like, we couldn't find the right hole. That was literally the whole thing.
First, like what? Which one's right? And then I'm like, well, what position do you have to be in for me to for this to be okay? Like, it's there's a whole lot that has to happen. And so, one night we were out of condoms, and something happened and I just did it. And I didn't common her, but we kind of had sex. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm like, okay, that's how that works. So I'm like, if we're going to have sex, what we need to do is start having sex without a condom because it slowly chokes away my boner. And then once I'm closer, then I'll come out, I'll put it on, and we'll get back in and fool my boner into thinking that that never happened. And that's kind of, that's still the way we do it till this day.
Oh, that's so tradition. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Tradition.
More positions now. But,
oh, okay.
But that's still what we do.
Are you going to raise your kids with that method?
I have no idea. I have no idea what I would say to my kids. Like, I mean, that's a weird thing, too, because we both do want kids, but not now. Oh. At all. And, which is weird, because I'm 27, and every single one of, almost all my high school Facebook friends not only have kids, but all of their pictures make them look like their moms and dads.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't feel like that's how I look. I don't know if it's a different hairstyle that you get when you become a parent. I don't know if it's a weariness around the eyes. I don't know if it's that in every picture they're holding a baby.
That might be a
pattern. That might have something to do with it.
Yeah, but they all feel way older than me now. Yeah. I feel like I'm Sophie's age. I feel like I'm your guys' age. I feel like, yeah. I don't feel like I'm 27.
Oh, I was gonna ask
we tease you because you're old, but we don't really mean it. Have you? It's like, not a big deal.
Well, yeah, you're just a cool guy hanging out.
Well, with no, thanks, Steve.
But
fuck you, Nick. I hate you.
Have you ever felt a disconnect with the people around here, the community you're in, because of your age?
The only thing that it makes it noticeable, and Ian never fails to let an opportunity go by when this happens, is when I make a reference to something that I feel like everyone should know, and nobody knows.
What was the one you made in playwriting class?
Columbo.
You made a Columbo reference, and
which, granted, is even a little old for me.
Yeah.
But I know about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I watched Nick at Night, you know? Like, I'm aware, like, I watched Happy Days on Nick at Night. And but, like, now, Happy Days wasn't on Nick at Night when you were young.
Mm-mm. It was like family tie, not family ties,
right. But the shows that were on Nick at Night when you were young were shows that were on regular TV when I was young.
Yeah.
Which is, like, I feel like it sped up way too fast.
Yeah. Like, it's Friends now. Friends is on Nick at Night.
That is retarded. Yeah. That should not be. That's not an old enough show to be on Nick at Night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we have How I Met Your Mother. That's pretty much the Friends.
And that'll be on Nick at Night in a year or so.
Like, it better not be. Like, going into syndication does not mean Nick at Night worthy.
Yeah.
You need 30 years for Nick at Night, in my book.
Yeah. I respect that. I dig that. But yeah, now it's all like that 70s show and Friends and all those turn of the century
series. There's no, like, you remember watching that 70s show, right, Ian?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That means it should not be on Nick at Night.
I agree.
TV Land is more traditionally like what Nick at Night was now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm gonna kind of backtrack a little bit.
Wait, yeah.
You I've wanted to know this for a while. I don't know why I've had this question in the back of my head, but it was one of the first things that I thought of when I started writing that question. Has your Crohn's ever gotten in the way of your sex life?
Oddly, no.
Really?
Really? Yeah. Well, I mean, like, some nights I'll be like farty, and I'm like, Sophie, I don't feel sexy tonight, so nothing's gonna happen. One time, like, I was farty, and she wanted to give me a blowjob. I'm like, do you want me to tap you out if something's gonna happen down there? But with sex, honestly, is the same way that it is with, like, stage performance, and that's a weird comparison, but, like, I know that acting and performing is correct for me because whatever stomach issues I have go immediately out the window when I'm on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think about it. I feel right. And then, like, for hours afterwards, I feel amazing. And I'm like, my body is letting me know that that's what's right for me.
Totally.
And so, like, in a similar way, when I'm having sex, even if I was having an issue, like, I don't know if it's the chemicals released during sex or anything, but it grants me a reprieve. Like, no one has ever had to go pee during sex because that part of you kind of shuts down.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of like that.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
What do you think it's only a physical reaction, a chemical reaction for when you're on stage, or do you think there's something more?
Chemical, physical, I don't know, like, I almost feel like if I feel like a lot of eyes are watching me, then I'm better. Is that, that's like if I'm in public and I know I'm being seen, I can see myself through other people's eyes. Does that, you know what I mean, don't you, Ian?
So next time you're having an attack, just be like, everyone, I have to poop, look at me. Problem solved.
I kind of do that with people a little bit. If I'm having a day where I'm like, talk to me, look at me, give me something to think about. Because it's part psychological, this disease, which is really weird, because some days it will be real, and I'm like, this is a real issue. And other days it will be literally like, the further I get away from a bathroom, the worse I feel. And if I turn around and start to walk back toward the bathroom, I'll immediately feel better. And I'm like, screw you, brain.
Yeah.
Like it feels like a leash, like a physical leash that just gets tighter the further I get away from a bathroom. And I'm like, no, I'm going to just keep walking today. And then, like, the day that I think it's psychological will be the day that it's real. And, like, I'll get screwed. And then that will screw me over psychologically for, like, months. Because then I won't know what's real and what's not. It's kind of a horrible thing to live with, honestly. I make it work, hopefully.
Yeah, you make it, you do your thing.
Yeah.
You're alive. That's what matters.
I have some good stories about crows. Like, one time when I was in LA, I was hitting on a chick, and something happened. I had to go to the bathroom. I crapped my pants on the way to the bathroom, had my extra stuff with me, took it out. Like, what you have to do is you have to strip entirely naked before you take your underpants off. Otherwise, there could be drippage on something else.
Yeah.
So you do that, you take them off, if you don't have a plastic bag with you, sometimes in garbage bags, in garbage cans, in public restrooms, they have extra bags down there. You get an extra bag from the bottom of the trash can, you put them in there, you tie it up, and you put that in the trash. Then you walk out, and I went back to hitting on her like nothing had happened. Like a pimp who just pooped his pants. A poop pants pimp. And then it happened to me a late night in a Walmart. Like 3 a.m. shop.
The perfect place.
Right. So I go in there and I go through my thing. I get completely naked in the stall and I'm trying to take care of business. And some guy walks in and I freeze because I'm completely naked and covered in shit. And he washes his hands and leaves. That's all he does. He just comes in, washes his hands and leaves. And I go, what a weirdo.
You're in Walmart.
No, excuse me as I finish.
Now, excuse me
while
I clean the shit off my naked in public body.
That's my new favorite story. That might be my new favorite story in the world. Oh, geez, that's fantastic. Yeah, you got any more?
You had mentioned how you were in LA the night before you decided that you needed to go home, or you were praying the poo away.
No, that's not what it was. I was praying to see what I should do.
Exactly. Yeah. But you had mentioned you were raised Christian.
Yeah.
I don't know what denomination.
I was brought up in a Calvinist church, and that's, it's like Protestant.
Okay.
But I found out later on that Calvinists believe in predestination, which is when you're born, it's already determined whether or not you're going to heaven or hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't agree with that.
Okay.
Because I'm like, well, what's the point of free will and living, playing it out if it's already predetermined? Like, I'm like, that's wrong to me. So I don't know that I am Calvinist, but I still am Christian.
Yeah, totally.
So
yeah.
Do you have a concept of heaven or hell?
Yeah, very much so.
Okay.
I think that heaven and hell are real. But most of my friends are non-Christian. And like, I feel like that's how Jesus is. Most of Jesus' friends were non-Christian. In fact, all of them were, because they were Jewish. But, I mean, like, he hung out with prostitutes and things, and, like, he loved a good discussion. And if you don't have discussions with people about your faith, then you're not growing as a person. And if you're not challenged, then you're just surrounding yourself by people who agree with you, and that's not good for you, and that's how, like... Mm-hmm. That's how the KKK starts, So, well, no, we really...
I agree. It was kind of like, I made a weird face, and I was just like, that's kind of a big logic jump, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
It absolutely makes sense.
Yeah, so I mean, like, if I'm not, like, so someone brought up the concept to me of, like, if hell is where you go for eternity, how does a just God say, like, you only were bad for one lifetime?
Mm-hmm.
How does being bad for one lifetime justify an eternity of suffering?
How could a God be completely just and completely merciful at the same time.
Right. Like that. I mean, so like that's sort of some questions I don't know the answer to, and that I'm kind of trying to work out right now. Because I mean, like, I'm very liberal as a Christian, which is, I think, why I'm able to have friends I have. You know.
Yeah.
But like, I'm pro gay people because there's too many of us, and we need people to not have kids and to raise the kids that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, to let's be honest. Interior design.
Yes.
The rest
so
of your, and make it pretty.
And not to mention, we are theater majors.
Yeah, so we have a lot of gay friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? And a lot of them are the most lovely, warm, genuine people I've ever met. Mm-hmm. And if the Bible says that they can't go to heaven, that's not right, because they're the nicest people I've ever met. They're nicer than a lot of Christians I know.
Yeah. Well, what do you think is the qualification to get into heaven?
Right now, I'm feeling like it's believing in something.
Is it believing something?
But being a good person and believing in something. So, like, I feel like if I die and Allah's up there, I hope Allah would go, you picked the wrong pony, but you were a good person within your thing.
Mm-hmm.
Come on in. Just as if I feel like if my God ends up being right, I hope if a Muslim person dies and he goes, hey, you were wrong, but you were a good Muslim your whole life. Get in here.
All right.
Yeah, I feel like that's how it should go. So, I mean, like, the only people I feel that are in trouble is the people that go, like, God is dead. You know, like atheist people that are, like, rampantly atheist about it.
Totally.
I have friends who are atheists, and I'm like, you know, cool, believe what you want to. But I said to Sophie once, I'm like, you know, believe what you want to, Sophie, but if you're ever in a life and death situation for me, will you ask Jesus to forgive you? Just for me. Just on the off chance that that's right, and that's what you needed to do, and that's the only thing you haven't done, because you've been a good person, will you just please, like, if you're in the plane that's going down, just say that for me.
So even if someone's
some people have told me is a selfish thing to ask.
It kind of is, but I get it. I understand.
That's the only thing that's going to make us be apart for eternity, and if it was reversed, I'd do it.
Yeah.
You know, like, but I don't know. Like, hopefully, like, just being a good, decent person and not being a dick to people is enough. So, Ian, you're screwed. But
I don't believe in anything, and I'm an awful person. So I'm going to double hell.
Double hell? Ooh, it's twice as hot. The devil has four horns and a six fork.
You'll be in one of his mouths down there.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because for those of you who don't know, I'm an atheist. Wasn't for a long time. I mean, like, I think we talked about this the other day, where, like, I used to, like, go on mission trips, and...
Oh, yeah, well, I did that, too. Like, we went to, like, Cranhill Ranch, did, like, the Wednesday night Bible school thing. Yeah.
Listen to a DC Talk or the News Boys.
See, I never did that, because I feel, like, people who only listen to Christian music were kind of douchey.
Yeah. I was a huge Reliant K fan. Like, a huge Reliant
K. Is that Maybelline?
Maybe it's Maybelline.
Maybe it's Maybelline, yeah.
Yeah.
I knew of it, but I was never into that scene.
Yeah.
Because in my day, you go to a rock concert on Saturday night, you ask for forgiveness Sunday morning. That's the way it works.
As long as you are a good person that Saturday night.
All right. When I made the discovery that you were Christian, it was kind of I don't know why. I was talking to someone about this. I have this really selfish thought that, like, all of my friends must be atheists because I'm an atheist. Which is totally douchey and selfish to think, but...
Well, I mean, like, it's like, you believe people are like you until you see otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like in the theater program, like, it was a hard lesson to learn that people are gay unless I learn otherwise, because that's more true often than not.
Yeah.
So I had no idea you were a Christian or that was important to you until we had this discussion. Is it a personal God for you?
Yeah. I mean, like, I believe that it's, we have the free will to go through the thing, but I feel like there are some parts that are sort of like, here's your test. Like, I feel like the point of Earth, because there has to be a point, because this is a lot to go through for there not to be a point, is, like, you're going to be in a situation someday where you will have a choice to do a thing or not do a thing.
Okay.
And you being in that moment at that time is the reason why you're here. And that might be simplistic, because it might be, like, every day, every moment is that. You know, but I can't get that complex. You either do what you're here to do, or you somehow fail to do what you were here to do. And that's the point of free will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you believe in an omniscient God, an all-knowing God?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
So he knows that everything that has happened is happening and will happen.
Well, if I don't know if he... Okay, cause this is where I get fishy with it. Because I'm not 100% sure. And you know what? I don't know. And no one knows, and that's the point.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
That's the point of... For me, that's the point of you for why you don't think there's anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the point of me for why I go, that's why I have faith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it can't be proven, and if it could, then faith would be worth nothing.
Yeah.
Okay? So, I believe that he has an idea of where things are supposed to go, but it's on us with our free will to either... go that way that we were supposed to go or not. Because if it was all written in stone, then he wouldn't have us go through it.
But so he's not all powerful then?
Well, I think all powerful and all knowing are two different things.
I know, but he's not both.
So
he's not a perfect
being. It doesn't
being.
Matter if he's all powerful or not, because he's not going to interfere too much, because that's the point of having us go through it, I think. And again, like, I don't know how well I have these ideas thought out, because they're a lot of childhood church stuff mixed with me figuring out things as an adult. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm still trying to come to terms with how it all fits. Mm-hmm. But that's sort of where I'm at. Yeah.
I'm totally down for that. You know, like, I'm... Okay, so, like, my personal journey... Like, I believe in philosophy, you know?
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, it means I believe in a lot of religion. And I believe in a lot of what you are saying, you know? I just don't believe in, like, a guy upstairs with a beard.
Well, and that's just my take.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's the idea of, like, reincarnation, which I don't think should be separated from Christianity, because, like... What if we keep getting reincarnated until our soul is ready for heaven? Mm-hmm. Like, what if we haven't learned that lesson? What if we keep making the wrong choice in that moment, and God's like, well, you're just not ready.
Have you ever came across a story online about the egg? Some guy, you know, he dies, he goes to this place, and then there's this other man there. And then he's talking to him, and he's like, okay, you're going to go back as this person at this time. And he tells him that, I keep on sending you back until you have experienced every single bit of humanity, and then you become like me.
That's interesting. Yeah. It's all the way that... I mean, like, the Bible is God's word interpreted by man.
Mm-hmm.
So there that's an inherently flawed thing, because we're always going to put our spin on it, and the people who wrote it at the time are going to be like, well, if we say this, then this will be beneficial to us in this way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, like, yeah. Yeah. But can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, absolutely.
For a long time, before I got to know more atheists, I had the thought of atheists being sort of like not people who didn't believe in God. That's what they said. Mm-hmm. But people that were angry at God.
Mm-mm.
Because of how...
That's not an atheist.
Well, I know that. Some I know that's not the traditional...
But that's definition. What you were told.
But no. It's not what I was told.
It wasn't.
That's I go, people are saying God is not existing because of how angry they are at God.
Mm-hmm. I genuinely think there might be people like that.
People, because, like, if you're an atheist and you're cool, then, like, you're fine. Because I know some cool atheists now, but there are atheists that are really in your face about it, like Christians in a way, like the Bible beating Christians that are like, God doesn't exist, and like they're so angry and out there about it that I'm like, that's too much anger for you to think there's nothing.
I believe there is a passage in the Bible. I can't quote it. I can't quote scripture, but it mentions something where if you at one point in your life shun God away, then you can never have him back into your life.
That's inherently not true in Christianity, because no matter what you do, you can always ask for forgiveness.
Okay. See, yeah. I could be wrong then.
Yeah.
But I guess real quick, I just want to throw that out there. It's not what I believe in, but it's a really cool thought, is that what kind of guides my appreciation for the universe that we all live in is if you give hydrogen enough time, it'll start to think about itself. It's true.
Some really smart blimps out there, man.
Yeah, there really is.
Yeah. Well, and that's how Ian came into existence.
Yeah. I'm going to write that down. That's a good... There's a joke there to be had.
Was that... I mean, like... I know you're trying to wrap up this bit, but I mean, any other... Does that explain me in
yeah,
that aspect?
I think we're going to have you on again at some
yeah,
point.
So, definitely.
I mean, we'll
yeah,
have...
yeah, this is the surface of me. There's
yeah,
deeper things,
there's,
for sure.
There's a lot more to...
Yeah.
There's some things I want to talk about, like, your relationship between religion and comedy, how that plays
your philosophy of comedy.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Which we'll save for next time. A couple other things, but yeah, I think we did pretty well, fellas.
I got awkward and deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's maybe we should call it deep
awkward
men
asking deep questions or
deep
men
asking questions. That just sounds awkward. Oh, I guess it's the
Deepak Chopra asking awkward Pak Chopra.
Nope. It's dead.
Work on it for next time.
So now, thank you, Nick, for that awesome interview. Let's go into the most important part of the podcast, which
plugs.
is plugs.
February 20th is the Deaf Comedy Spam fundraiser at Connections Comedy Club.
And I'm pretty sure this will go up before then.
So. Okay, good. Yeah, so it's going to be at 8 o'clock. And it's $15, but Spam gets to keep 10 of that 15. So it's a really cool thing to raise money to send, you know, theater kids to showcase or whatever the equivalent is of that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's some people, for $15, we said this last week, but $15 for a comedy show where you got, like, how many?
Like 12 to 13, depending on who's
That's
shows.
An awesome...
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
So we got legit comics that have been doing it for a long time. We got some theater kids that have just taken the comedy class, and this is like their first real set beyond their exam, which was a set at Comedy Club.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really cool. And it's the ones that were interested in it. You know what I mean? Like, the ones that had no interest in it didn't want to do this. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Where else can we find you?
You can find me on the Nobody's podcast and also on Two Tons of Talk.
Yeah.
Which is the on the Nobody's network. And, I should be getting some dates locked down pretty soon for, like, one-nighters, but I don't have those at this moment.
Okay, totally.
Yeah.
Do you have a personal... Do you have a Twitter feed?
Or... Yeah, at Nick Dressel. It's just NICDRESSEL.
Totally.
Yep.
You can find me at... on Twitter at Page, Ian. That's PageComMaian. You can also find me at... My website, page.ian.com. I'm in the comedy fundraiser.
Oh, yeah, you're going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's hope.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's the first time I ever saw you was Sophie showed me a video of you doing stand-up comedy at the Union.
Oh, totally.
Before I ever met you.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I don't miss doing stand-up.
Well, like, she'd talk to you, and she talked to you about Wicked, and I'm like, who is this... sort of chubby guy that also does comedy that's talking to you about Broadway shows at school, Sophie. What the hell is this? And so when I met you, I had an attitude against you.
You scared me the first time.
I scared
time.
You the first time? Yeah.
Totally
Dude, you scared me the first time.
There's a reason.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all of my stuff.
Okay. As usual... I don't have many things to actually plug, except every Thursday from 6:30 to 8 o'clock is the MSU Philosophy Club.
Or is it?
Or is it a club? Is it philosophy? I don't know. We just talk and eat pretzels. It's a fun time.
That's what we need is pretzels.
Pretzels, man.
Also...
I call them bush killers.
Bush killers.
Huh.
I watched W last night.
Okay.
Also, part of the philosophy department, Friday through Saturday, March 15th through 16th, for the undergraduate conference, the keynote speaker is Graham Priest, and he is a philosopher and author of a recently published book called Doubt Truth to Be a Liar. There's a reading group for it that meets every Sunday at 2 o'clock. If you're interested, contact our email address.
Yeah, which is...
People meet every Sunday to talk about the work of a priest.
Grand priest.
Yeah. Yeah.
which you can contact us. You can email us at awkwardmenawkwardquestions@gmail.com. Or you can hit us up on Twitter at realawkwardmen.
Or that's so quirk.
That's so quirk.
Hashtag
that's so quirk.
And... We're also, we also have a Facebook page that you can like us at. So please do that. I think that's it, though.
Yeah.
Yep.
I had a great time.
Cool. I'm glad you did. This was a really insightful experience. We learned a lot, I think.
Keep it crispy.
I hate you. That's the only reason you did this podcast. All right, we're going to end this before Gabe yells at me because it's 12:30 in the morning. So, goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye. See you out there.